All right, welcome back to the KE Report Weekend Show. We are now shifting our focus over to the energy sector. I hope everybody enjoyed those first couple segments with Rick Bensinger, focusing more on kind of the metals and mining sectors. Now it's time for energy as we're chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also writes the Ion Energy Report, which is free and really covers the data that is being released on a very regular basis for the oil and natural gas sectors. Joseph also does quarterly webinars for all his subscribers. He dives into company reports, answers your questions, and he's also running a holiday special. I'll post a link in the show notes so you can get access to that holiday special and also see the webinar replay from this recent Thursday. So, Joseph, thank you for taking time on this weekend show. Let's start off with some of the recent data and price moves for oil and natural gas. Oil broadly has been in a, let's say, sideways to downtrend, still holding that $65 level, but having a lot of trouble now just even in the low 70s to get above there. Natural gas is doing a lot better. It's at highs for the year, even touched its high from 2023, but still in a way not as exciting as it has been in a few years past. So, Joseph, key data from the energy sector. What's caught your eyes recently?
Well, the politics of oil are quite interesting in the States. You know, Trump's view is drill, baby, drill, and Biden has hurt the industry. And he has, in the sense of not allowing access to federal lands, not allowing certain offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, not allowing activity in Anwar and parts of Alaska. But the industry runs on economics. And if the Tier 1 Permian and Eagle Ford wells are attractive, or North Dakota wells are attractive, they're going to put them on. So U.S. production on Wednesday, when we got the EIA data, was 13.5 million barrels, up from 13.2 a year ago. 13.5 is the record high number. So it's really done well. Exports are really taking off. The light oil coming from the Permian and the Eagle Ford can't be used in the refineries on the Gulf Coast because they use heavier crudes from Canada, Mexico, and even Venezuela, which is shocking. But the exports last week, 4.66 million barrels, up 285,000 barrels from 4.38 from the week before. And so you've got a very significant increase in U.S. exports of light crude. And a lot of that is going to Europe. Some of it goes to Asia. And so the American industry is, you know, when you take into account the consumption of 20.47, the U.S. produces 22.9 million barrels of liquids between domestic crude production and natural gas liquids, like we talk about condensate and other things in Canada when we add our numbers up. So 22.9 million is the U.S. production last week, U.S. consumption 20.47. So the U.S. is over 2 million barrels a day of excess capacity. And that's why you see these strong export numbers. And you see, of course, imports from Canada. And so this whole thing now of tariffs, I think it was a political thing for Trump to, you know, try to get some attention before, and also to make the Biden administration look weak, which they've done a good job of doing on. And in return, the Canadian government is trying to have a united front. And there's not much fentanyl coming in Canada. There's not much immigration here. I think Trump would be very happy if the Never Trumpers leave the U.S. and come to Canada. He'd enjoy that. But he also probably doesn't want the illegal immigrants crossing into Canada and then sneaking back in. So the Canadian government's going to have to play ball there. I think the president of Mexico did a great job saying, hey, you know, this is going to cost you America too. But right after that, she had a conversation with Trump, and Trump, you know, mentioned it, that she is going to have the military come and close the border, just like they did at the end of the Trump administration in 2020. So I think this is just a political football, and, you know, he throws carnage, you know, makes everybody upset. And then, of course, everybody then throws things back saying, here's what we'll do, here's what we'll do, don't attack us. And, you know, the people need to realize that the energy industries are so interlinked. If they say they're going to put a 25% tax on our heavy crude going to the Gulf Coast, to Midwest refineries, those Midwest refineries would not be economic, and they wouldn't find another source. So it would raise prices, and Trump has said he wants to lower prices. I don't buy at all that he's talking about cutting the price of gasoline in half. There's no way the industry can work at $30 oil prices. You need between 65, 70 to be economic. And if there's going to be growth in 2025, 26, demand growth by 1.5 million, 2 million barrels a day per year, then we're going to be looking at $90 prices at the end of 2025, and I believe over $100 prices for the WTI in 2026. So I think we got another few weeks of sloppy prices, 66 to 72, and then I think we're going to be looking at 70 to 84 in the first half of 2025, 90 in Q4, so 80 to 95 in Q3, Q4, but consistent over 90 in Q4, that's going to wake everybody up to the values in the sector. And I think we're going to see a potential doubles and triples in the sector, especially from those that are depressed, that have been beaten up during this tax loss selling season, where the fundamentals are good, the balance sheets are good, they had growth in volumes. And so we'll be covering that on our webinar and talking to people about what the best bargains are, and they can decide what fits their portfolio with their investment advisors and make the right decisions for themselves.
Well, Joseph, just following up on the political football in the energy space, a lot of people look at Trump as being big on cutting regulation, cutting the red tape, possibly allowing some of the drilling and expansion on the federal land. So I know one of the initiatives is to increase it by even 3 million barrels per day more than the 13.5 you just reported on. If we were doing 16, 17 million barrels per day of oil, what does that do to the price of oil if U.S. is already at record production levels and then it spikes the football even further? What does that do? And how does that relate to overseas producers like OPEC?
Well, it means that OPEC, if demand grows 1.5 million to 2 million, and the Americans bring on 1 million barrels a day in 2026, because, you're going to have to drill it up in 25, put in facilities, bring it to the coast, the Gulf Coast. So if in 26 they bring on 1 million, 27, and then 28 a million, there's your 3 million. But if the demand growth is 1.5 million to 2 million, it still leaves room for OPEC to bring on a little more production. And they're going to manage that so that the prices stay firm. So my view is that we will see higher prices simply because OPEC needs the revenues. When they talked about 2.2 million that they were going to bring on in December, now they're talking about bringing it on in 2025 when demand warrants. The reality is 2 million of that 2.2 is Saudi Arabia. The only other ones that can bring on minute amounts are Kuwait and UAE, and they're going to follow, the ball as called by the Saudis, so Aramco. And if people think there's somebody that's going to put a glut of oil on the market, the only way that could happen is if Venezuela's government changes and all the American firms that used to run the Venezuelan oil market go back in. And over a couple of years, you could see 3-4 million barrels. But at this point, I don't see Maduro leaving. And Trump is really not focused on them. He's more focused on Iran. And if he tightens up the economic, shipping, insurance, banking, and makes it harder for Iran to sell oil to China and India, then we're going to see it, them down in production by 1 million or 2. And that gives more room for growth for American and other OPEC production.
Joseph, real quick, then over to natural gas. That has been doing quite a bit better, as I said, reached highs from last year, but historically still not an overly attractive natural gas price. But the trend right now is in the bullish favor. Is this just due to some colder weather we've seen, or is this a more sustainable uptrend for natural gas?
Well, we've got colder weather, and Europe is seeing very cold weather. So, and the drainage of their storage is happening quicker. We've had a 30% increase in just the last couple of months in the price of LNG, and it's now in the 15 US to 17 US, depending upon the market. Prices in Asia are now over $15 an MCF. So you've got very strong pricing around the world. So if we ever get more LNG plants on in the US and we get our LNG Canada on in Q2, Q3, there's going to be some fabulous prices there, and that's going to lift Canadian. So US prices today are, $3.30. When I talk to companies that work in the States, they're all saying they want $3.50 on a consistent basis. They don't want 350 just for, December, January, February, which of course winter, and then in March, April, it goes down to $2 or a buck. So a lot of them are holding off drilling or completing wells until they see a more sustainable price. So what we're going to be watching is the storage in the States, and the EIA reports those data points on Thursdays, and we're going to need to watch to see big drawdowns. If we see multiple weeks of 200 BCF or more and cold weather, Arctic fronts going down into Texas, that's what the natural gas energy bulls are looking for. And again, we're still in November. Usually those big draws occur late December, January, and February. So we're weeks away from it. But if we do see $4 or $5 spikes and big drawdowns, that will help the Canadian price because we ship gas into the States West. Right now, I think we're about $1.50. For a couple of months ago, we were under 50 cents because of the storage in Canada being full. But with winter here across Canada, storage is now being used. Gas is being moved from the Coastal GasLink into the LNG plant, and LNG Canada is doing trial runs. So we're within 6 months of the Canadian story going from ugly to going to good.
Well, Joseph, let's shift over to some of the energy stocks now, just because when you look at the makeup of the larger producers, best represented by the ETF XLE, they're actually holding up really well. They're actually still up near highs in the valuations they're getting. But you mentioned earlier in the call here that you're seeing some real value in some of the smaller to mid-tier companies that have just been beaten down during this pullback in the oil prices. So maybe speak to the disparity and opportunity you're seeing between the large caps versus the small and mid caps.
Yeah, everybody on, when people, tiptoe into the sector, they're looking at CNQ and Suncor, and Cenovus has not been a good performer. As you know, if you look at the chart, it's not done well. MEG has, recently hasn't done well. So it's really, CNQ and CNQ and Suncor that are the poster childs for exposure to the Canadian oil and gas industry. Imperial Oil would be in that group too. But there's so many medium-sized companies that are below the radar of most portfolio managers, generalist portfolio managers, that are trading at bargains, and that's where I see tremendous value. And a lot of them have decent liquids percentages, and so you can find some bargains that are trading at under 2x cash flow, under PDP, proved developed producing reserves, and historically at market tops, they're going to trade at the 2P reserves, and they're going to trade at 5 and 6 times or 7 times cash flow. So there's a lot of bargains out there. I'm going to go through, five or six of them on the webinar tonight. And I think people, should be going below the big, poster child names and looking at the value opportunity. And I think they're going to realize you can buy a lot of great companies trading at 1.5, 2 times cash flow, with decent, balance sheets, with growth prospects in front of them. Go to the presentations on their website and you'll see how they look to grow into 2027, 28. Many of them are looking at pretty significant growth rates. And that to me is what you want, is to buy them when nobody cares. Tax loss selling season, we've seen that happen before, where the stocks get beat up in, November, December. They have a good bounce in January, February, and then if we have a good sector in 2025, where we do see $90 oil, I think you're going to see doubles and triples and maybe some that even perform better than that. So to me, I'm recommending people take advantage of the bargains that are here now, between now and mid-December, because of tax loss selling. Tax loss selling is indiscriminate, because people who made gains in Nvidia or Microsoft or any of the AI names or any of the semi names or wherever, they're going to have to pay tax to Ottawa. And as you know, the Canadian tax rate for capital gains is going up. They haven't passed the legislation, but we'll all be paying it when we get to April. So they're going to offset, people will want to offset with losers. So if a stock is trading at, $5 and you bought it at 10 and you sell it at 475 or 465 or 455, you really don't care. You want to trigger that tax loss. And so I think the next 2 weeks are going to be a little ugly for it, but for those people who do their homework, find the names they really want to own, putting bids in below the market is going to be a very rewarding opportunity.
Hey, that argument to go down to the smaller companies makes total sense because of how well these large companies are doing. But Joseph, why are investors so interested in these large oil and natural gas companies when the price has been so boring? I realize they're making money, but again, they haven't been seeing the growth simply from the underlying commodity price. So is it just that potential Trump policy where these companies could tack on a bunch of growth in the near term?
Well, if you remember, CNQ bought out Chevron. So there was a very big transaction that grew that company. And of course, you know, you've seen a lot of normal course issuer bids from Imperial Oil. Suncor is doing an NCIB, raising the dividend. The new management team there has got the company back on track. So it's easy to, you know, as a portfolio manager to say, if I want energy exposure, I'll buy CNQ and Suncor and I've got my weighting, you know, and then maybe you buy some of the pipeline infrastructure stocks or royalty trusts, you know, stocks like Topaz has done extremely well. You can find names, you know, Enbridge has done well, TC Energy has done well, Pembina has done well. So if you go into those places, you can have good performance, good dividends. And historically, the pipeline and infrastructure stocks raise their dividend in Q1 of the following year. So in Q1 of 25, they'll be raising the dividends again, maybe 4, 5, 6%. So again, that's a good place for a lot of people who need income to go. And that's why, you know, and they're very liquid names. And that's why the portfolio managers are focusing there. But historically, once you get an energy bull market running, everybody starts moving down and says, where are the bargains? Who's drilling and finding new reserves? Whose balance sheets are great? Who's going to be able to raise their dividend? Who's going to be able to have an aggressive NCIB? And that's where you, when you see the big two doubles, triples, you know, 5 and 10 baggers that we saw in the 2000-2008 cycle, you know, we saw some stocks up 20-30 times during that cycle. So again, take advantage of the dips during, you know, during these super cycles. We think this one started in 2020. We got up to $120 during the Russian-Ukraine invasion. We backed off to 66. I think, as I said, I'm looking at 90 and then 125, 26. And if that does develop, we're looking at significant moves to the upside.
Well, Joseph, just building upon that point, if we do see $90, $100 a barrel oil, and you see the sector start taking back off again for the next leg of the longer bull market that's unfolding, do you think that the small to mid-cap stocks that are focused more on growth, on drilling and expansion, will have the leverage, or are investors still looking for that share buyback and dividend aspect to the company as well? What do you think is more important for driving interest, I guess, in a speculative market?
Well, I think what longer term, it's going to be exploration. So people are going to want to see growth, but that's when at $100, $110, $120 oil, the market's going to say, pay me, I want to see growth. Right now, markets want to see return to shareholders. So they want to see NCIBs, they want to see dividends, and you know, and so they want to see free cash flow, and they want that cash flow, that free cash flow, a third of it to be used for lowering debt and internal growth, and then two-thirds return to shareholders. And a lot of companies are doing that. And the ones that have done that have received, you know, some reward from the market, but they're still very cheap relative to where they can be. And I think that as we, you know, start getting into those higher commodity prices, people will be saying, okay, we know you've got a good balance sheet. We know you've got good assets that you can grow. We want to see growth, not 5% growth. We want to see more growth. And the basins in Canada can do that. We're going to pay you for growth. Now go spend more than cash flow drilling and growing faster. So again, that's going to be something that's later in the cycle. At this point in the cycle, people are still in their bomb shelters, you know, because of how bad things were. And of course, you had a nice bounce from 2020 to 21. But since then, we've had a 2-for-1 sale, crude oil 120 down to 66. So we're looking at, you know, people being very uncomfortable taking risk in the sector. And yet the value perspective has never been better in my book. I can find a lot of companies with great balance sheets trading under 2x cash flow, trading at a quarter of their 2P NAV, trading, you know, at or below PDP, which is what the banks lend against. And as somebody who's followed the sector for a number of decades, we haven't seen bargains like this very often. And historically, those bargains don't last very long. And if I'm right, by the second half of 25, people will look at the prices now versus where they are in Q3, Q4 and say, wow, wasn't that a great one?
That's so crazy to see, or for you to see all these bargains out there when, again, we have the major oil producers, natural gas producers, the XLE broadly is still trending right around all-time highs. So clearly, I guess there is an opportunity here. Joseph, what about those investors that don't want to take individual company risk? Is there an ETF? Is there a basket that you would recommend these individuals buy that give them exposure to these smaller energy companies that you think have the best upside potential?
I don't spend a lot of time on the ETFs. I'll have to pass on that. But there are ETFs from Horizon, from the banks, from different developers. So people can just Google Canadian energy ETFs and then look at them and look at the liquidity of them, look at the day trading, in terms of the volume. If you do it, I would want to recommend that you do it and invest only in those that have some liquidity. And also, you might want to be in one that includes both energy service as well as E&P. So again, I'll leave that to others who have that expertise. That's not something I spend a lot of time on or any time on.
Well, Joseph, I know you spend time on looking at the oil services side of things. So, looking at pipelines, looking at drillers, looking at other companies that support with tech, the oil and nat gas space. Any company you've already alluded to a few of them, but any companies that really are on your radar as a good value here?
Well, let's start with the drillers. I'm a big fan of Ensign and Total. They've done very well for people, and the Q3 numbers were very good. If we continue to see a pickup in activity for drilling, especially as we move with more projects being approved on the West Coast for the LNG plants. So I think that you want to have some exposure there. I'd be looking also at, tool companies, McCoy Global out of Edmonton. There's others, some people like Enterprise Group. So there's some names out there that people can look at. I'd be recommending people not only own Canadian E&P, but Canadian companies working internationally. Gran Tierra announced a very nice discovery in Ecuador yesterday. The stock had a nice bounce from that. You saw probably yesterday that Valeura announced a nice discovery in Jasmine offshore Thailand. So there's been some very good drill results, and I think that's where historically the biggest returns have come from those companies that are explorers and that come up with meaningful new reserves, and then, within a reasonable period of time, bring those onto production.
So, Joseph, are we missing anything? Are there any other companies here that you want to bring up to us that you see maybe even more so as near-term opportunities?
Yeah, I'd be looking at companies that missed in the quarter because they shut in gas because natural gas prices, especially dry gas, was you didn't make any money. Veren at the high was 1267. It's now 744. The 52-week low was 684. So that stock is very, very cheap. I'll give you another one. Obsidian trading at 804. The 52-week low 731. The high 1237. So very cheap name there. And then I'd give you Bonterra trading at 337. 310 was the low, 687 the high. So you can see there's been a lot of 2-for-1 sales out there. Alvopetro, which is in Brazil and gets a very high price, pays a great dividend, balance sheet is strong, no debt. 438 today, 381 was the 52-week low, 764 the high. And you're getting paid a very nice dividend. And they have no debt. So there's bargains out there, tremendous bargains. And I'll be spending a lot of time on them on the webinar. So if any of your clients can't, it's past the weekend, we have an archive. We put the webinar in the archive a day or two later. So if they become a subscriber, they can get into the archive and listen to it thereafter.
I mentioned it on the onset, but just remind everybody what this holiday special is all about.
Yeah, what we do is for December, our manager subscriptions puts in a holiday special. And so for the annual, it's HOLA24, so HOLA 24, and it's $100 off the normal $9.99, so it's $8.99. And then for the quarterly, for people who want to get a feel for it, the better deal is the annual. So take it for a quarter, see that you like it, and then switch to an annual. That's $50 off, so it's HOLQ24, so $50 off from $2.99 to $2.49. And if you can, please join us for the webinar, in the archives, and then hopefully our webinars that we have in 2025. And please take advantage of the bargains that I talk about on the show, depending upon what fits your parameters. Please, as always, talk to your investment advisor to see what is appropriate for you so that you're not taking a risk that's inappropriate for your account.
All right, that wraps up this weekend show. Joseph, as always, great chatting with you. Thanks for the rundown in the energy sector. Everyone listening, I hope you enjoyed this weekend show. I hope you all, at least all of you Americans, had a very happy Thanksgiving, spent time with your family and friends. And just as a reminder, please go back through our website, kereport.com, or podcast. Just search The KE Report to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the last week. Everyone, thanks for tuning in this weekend. Joseph, always great having you on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.